Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, family. Greetings. I am Khadija Seven. I want to thank everyone for taking a moment out of their day to tune in, listen, catch up with, spend time, gather, however you want to use those words. But we come together every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern to share, fellowship, to build, to grow, and to, you know, help each other through this journey of life. This journey is taxing, tempting, all the other things that you can think of. This journey will have you going through it. And so, you know, it's nice to have a time and place where we can all get together, gather under the shade of the tree for a second, because it's been, I'm in Georgia, and it's very hot. So we're going to gather under the shade of the tree for a moment and just sit back and work with each other, share how the day is and all the different things that we've worked on through the week, and including worked on through our life. This is going to be a real interesting show, a very different kind of show. And I'm just glad that everybody is here to walk this journey with us. We are working and walking and building together. So this is how we're going to come together. All the shows are incredibly inspiring to me. I spend each of the shows with pen and paper close to me because there's always something that is going to come up. Either spend some more time thinking about, learning about, praying about. And so I spend a lot of time with pen and paper before, during, and after the shows. And many others do as well. But if you ever wanted to go back and listen to a show, there is a Wonderful Approach Facebook page. And the Facebook page has all the old shows on it, some of the conversations that have sparked behind some of the shows that have come forward. So, and I absolutely adore being able to kind of relive some of these steps, especially when I put these big asterisks, like, oh, yeah, we definitely have to go back and rethink about that. So if you're interested, the Wonderful Approach Facebook page is where the old shows are. And if you have one that really touched you that you like, feel free to share it on your page. We have an interesting show coming up, Understanding Addiction and Methods and Techniques to Assist. Oh, so powerful. So powerful. But before we get into that, we're going to recap our show from last week, Releasing in Order to Heal. And I'm going to have Mama Khadija come on board and share with us about the Releasing in Order to Heal. That was one of the awesome shows, and she really did her thing on the show. Hold on, let's see if I can grab her. Welcome to the show.
Greetings, family. How is everyone doing on this beautiful Wednesday? I am blessed. I am feeling very good about being here. I'm excited about the show and with the potential of some people that really have some in-depth insight into addiction to call in. And if you have a story to share, please do so. But first, like Seven said, we're going to recap last week's show, Releasing in Order to Heal. I coined it as Letting Go to Heal. And we talked about some steps. We talked about three different steps, acknowledging the need to heal. You can't heal what you don't acknowledge. So if you don't own up to it, if you're not aware of it, if you don't see it, or if you're afraid to face it, it's not going to happen. So acknowledgement would be the first step. The second step is your cleanup step. Remember, we talked about not getting the wound closed up, stitched up, without it being cleansed first. So during that step, we talked about purging, we talked about cleansing, we talked about letting it go. And then that third step, we dealt with a regimen of treatment. And depending on what caused the problem, what you need to fix, that's going to determine your treatment. We also were able to share basically some of the challenges dealing with each one of these situations. and acknowledgement, of course. If you're not willing to fess up, to own up, face whatever it is, it's going to make that step very, very difficult. And sometimes that's the biggest hurdle that people have to get over. The challenges for that second step, we shared the purging, the letting go. Believe it or not, some people are not willing to let the pain go. They're not willing to fix it because they are so accustomed to the familiar. They want to stay in their comfort zone. So, no, they don't want to let it go. So that, I think, is one of the biggest challenges in following these steps. And the third step, you know, it takes faith, it takes discipline, stick-to-itiveness, support from others, a positive attitude, and those are the components of that final step, and that's a lot. And then your repeat is needed. So that was our Releasing to Heal show. It was an awesome show. And just identifying those steps, because sometimes we need a formula. And I think formulas are very helpful because it gives you a step-by-step. Okay, you add this much, a formula or a recipe. This is what you do first, this is what you do second, and this is what you do third. So hopefully that was very helpful for a lot of our listening family. Seven, do you want to add anything to that show from last week, Releasing in Order to Heal?
Yeah, the show was awesome. It was awesome. I got a lot of, you know, really good positive feedback about, you know, people really starting to understand what it took to do the releasing. The two things I know that are vital in this process is honesty and patience. And those two things are deal breakers because you can't heal what you won't reveal. You know, if you're not going to see it, you're not going to be honest, you're not going to say, hey, yeah, this is the problem, then it's going to be absolutely impossible for even if the best surgeon, you know, if they're looking in your heart and you really, it's your leg that's bothering you, they're not going to be successful. And so it takes an honesty. And sometimes honesty takes bravery to really get to that process in order to do the healing. I was going through some of the archives, and it amazes me how many of the shows that we have are about healing, forgiveness, letting go, cleanliness. You know, this is a major aspect of spirituality. Is a major aspect of just living a life. There's a lot of cleanup work that's needed. You know, by the time an average person gets 25, 30, they've had at least one heartache. You know, they've had this regret. They've had this disappointment. There's been a life challenge that has taken them out of their happy zone. And, you know, I say 25 to 30. For some people, school age. It's, you know, preschool age, you know. But by the time you've gotten to 25, 30, you have a little baggage on you. You know, you kind of walk through the mud enough times for your shoes to look dirty. You know, there's some things going on. And so you may spend the rest of your life cleaning up some things that you tracked in so young you didn't even know it was dirt, you know. So I just want to encourage everyone, you know, if it may seem as if you have a lot of baggage or things that you need to clean up, welcome to the club. You know, this is a part of this human experience, and you have to really begin to understand it's okay. Start where you are, and let's start working on it. But don't feel some kind of way because you have things to work on. We all have things to work on. And so, just a shout out to those that are wondering, like, man, my toolbox is half full, but my problems are overflowing. Sometimes life seems that way. And, you know, there are ways and steps to get through it. But that honesty piece, even that came up last week, we have to look at it clearly. and, you know, toughen up, and we're going to have to go through some things. And you'll be better on the other side for it. But, you know, running's not going to work. Flojo could not run this. You know, we have really got to be able to bear down and to do the work. And I'm just very thankful that we have people that can assist us with this. And we have tools and techniques that work. And we have retreats. We have ways to work through things. And every problem that I see, I always see, well, I know who can help me with this problem, you know. So problem, you can be there if you want to. I already got my Rolodex going. I know how to get rid of you. So that kind of leads me into this understanding addiction and methods and techniques to assist. This is a difficult topic. This is a very difficult topic, but it's a very real topic. When Mama Khadija, you know, every week we have these powwow meetings, and we're like, okay, what's this topic? What's the topic? What are we going to do? First thing she said was, oh, you're not going to like this. I said, oh, Lord. That's not a good way to start a conversation. You're not going to like it. You're not going to like it. And I'm like, not going to like it. Okay, unicorns, butterflies. No, addiction. I said, addiction. Wow, okay. So I said, I don't like it, but that's why we have to talk about it. This is why we have to share. This is why we have to encourage and educate, because it is an ugly type of thing, and we really need to understand clearly what it is so that we can properly address it. And this is affecting many, many households. So it is absolutely mandatory that we start addressing it and start equipping people on how to handle it. I don't know a lot about addiction. My exposure to substance abuse has been very, very limited. But I know lots of people affected by it. And I know the anguish, the disappointment, the everything that the support team feels, because they're like, why can't I just help you with this, you know? So when this came about, I was like, even though I don't want to deal with addiction, I sure would like to know how to help it. I would like to be able to see signs so it doesn't surprise me and everything like that. So we're here, and we're going to bear our teeth down, and we're going to really get into the understanding of this, because the more we understand, the more we can address it properly, the more we can share in the healing of it. You know, this is going to take, if it takes a village to raise a child, it takes an army to fight addiction. You know, it really is an all-hands-on-deck type of affair. So I'm looking forward to learning, and I'm probably going to be doing more writing than talking this particular show, and that's okay. You know, when I was trying to find out exactly what addiction was, I'm looking for this kind of like textbook understanding, and it is having a compulsive need for a habit-forming substance or a strong inclination or being compelled to do or use or indulge in something repeatedly. I've seen that before. And I believe they call it addictive behavior. I've seen it before, not necessarily with drugs, but with work or with anything that is out of balance. And this out of balance is, you know, there's a point where you're out of balance where you may not have realized that you're spending too much time here or you're doing too much of this. But when the inclination is so strong, when you are compelled, when you have no power and no control over it, we're now talking about a different situation. And so we're going to have Mama Khadija come and give us some more information about it. And I'm going to be, the role I'm playing today is I am the concerned support, because that's who I really am. I want to help and love us through addiction, and I don't understand why my love is not enough. So we need to talk about what it is, and for those that are sharing or coming in and educating us, please understand that you're speaking to someone who does not understand. You know, so tonight we're going to take it slow just for me and really, you know, try to be compassionate with those that are trying to be compassionate with. So, Mama Khadija, could you shed more light for us when it comes to this addiction?
Well, I just want to open up with, in response to something that you said, that you had a limited exposure to substance addictions, which is true. I am your mother, and that was something that was very important to me, raising my children, that they have very limited to no exposure, obvious exposure or overexposure to addiction, because I am an adult child. I am an adult child of an alcoholic, and all of the dynamics that go along with that label, I have lived through. I've had, you know, firsthand exposure from my father and several of my aunties and uncles. So that was something that I grew up that with, that I knew was not the norm, that I found very distasteful, and but nevertheless, it did leave scars. It did leave scars. And it wasn't until I talked with a friend of mine, been 29 years old, and I was telling him, he was telling me about his father being an alcoholic, and I said, well, my father was an alcoholic. And I remember when Friday rolled around and I was in school, when that 3 o'clock bell rang for us to leave, I would always get a knot in my stomach. Now, I'm sharing this with him. I would get a knot in my stomach because I knew what the weekend meant. The weekend meant drinking and fighting and cursing and acting out of sorts until Sunday night. So he asked me, well, don't you think that you were affected by growing up like that? And at that point in my life, I had really never given it a second thought. And then as I began to develop my career in mental health, I started taking my patients to 12-step programs, usually NA or AA meetings. And I said, man, this is some good stuff. This is really some good stuff. So I just really like the 12-step program. One of my alcoholic family members went to AA when I was a little girl. I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was a club, and got clean. So I want to share with you, before I even go into the whole addiction piece, which is not much, the prayer of serenity, which is a prayer that so many people use now, but I think it has its roots, its beginning in the 12-step programs. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Now, I have that prayer on my ancestral shrine because I just think the Almighty, that my ancestors were able to have that exposure to a 12-step program and clean their life up. So my hat's off to the 12-step programs. There are a lot of ways that basically you can deal with in terms of treatment that you can deal, you know, with addiction, but I'm kind of partial to 12-step programs. But I did hear your definition of addiction, Seven, and what I came up with, and this is a little bit of a controversy here. Some people feel that it's a choice that people make, and some people feel that it's a disease. I personally think that it's a brain disease, okay, that is manifested or shows itself through compulsive behavior, despite the effect that it has on their body or their personal circumstances, their family, whatever, whatever, and in spite of all the consequences. So that would apply to addictive behavior, that would apply to the substance abuse, that would apply to gambling, that would apply to all of those addictive things that we're dealing with in our world today. Now, the addictive, the addiction, there's
Can
so
I add
many.
One more word in there?
Yes, yes.
Because you said gambling, and I was like, I have to put this in there, pornography as well.
There are
a couple of big addictions that are kind of flying under the radar, but really they're an addiction at this point. So, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can add the gambling, you can add the, you know, the pornography, you can add the sex addicts. There was even a silly show on television that was My Strange Addiction or something. People addicted to eating, you know, cotton out of mattresses and all kinds of stuff like
that's compulsive behaviors. We have to look at
compulsive behaviors that, of course, have adverse effects on, you know, you socially, mentally, physically, you know, spiritually. So yeah, and you have no concern for those adverse effects, for those consequences. And that's when you know that you're in trouble. Many times your thinking is distorted. Whether you're actively using the drug at that time or whether you're in a dry spirit spell, your thinking is distorted. Of course, all kinds of harm to your internal organs as well as your outer appearance and your brain function. Your decision-making is, you know, way, way out of balance. Your judgment is way out of alignment. Your mood could be up, could be down, could be up and down within a matter of seconds. Social problems galore. Another biggie for the addictions is, you know, engaging in risky behaviors, whether that's sharing needles, whether that's having unprotected sex, you know, whatever. That risky behavior is all a part of what goes along with these addictions. Now, the very first thing I think that people have to look at in dealing with addiction, and it's actually the first step in a 12-step program, is acknowledging, okay, that you're powerless over whatever this addiction is. You're powerless over it, and that your life has become unmanageable. So we have to recognize the problem, and we have to seek professional help, whether it's hospitalization, which is needed sometimes, therapy, rehab, or it could be some type of outpatient program. Part of that would be a 12-step program. There are all kinds of treatment modalities for the addiction. So I have asked a couple people to come in and to share with our listening audience. I can only give, from my point of view, I'm actually on the other side of the fence in that I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, never been an alcohol counselor or a specialist or therapist, and I have never had a problem with an addiction that I know of. So, Baba Adisa, our brother in Virginia, who actively works every single day in this field and is highly qualified, I believe he's working on his PhD, but I'd like to invite him to come on and share some information about addiction. Baba Adisa, are you there? Can you please press 1 to acknowledge that you are ready to share with our listeners?
Okay, Mama Khadija, I got a
yes.
1, so we're going to say opening phone lines. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and welcome to, well, thank you for having the show.
That's a difficult one.
Thank you. Yes.
This is Baba Adisa, and as correct as you are with the introduction, I do work with people in recovery and people in addiction. The language is changing because there's so much of a stigma that's associated with the term addiction. So now we say people in recovery or people working on recovery. And so, yeah, there's a lot of information available to the general public. The thing that I think is very much important is the fact that, you know, by addressing this issue in a non-addicted group, you allow people to think for themselves, where am I at in this paradigm? Where am I at in my life with my habits and the things that consume me? And it's very important for we as African American people to recognize what is detrimental to us, what is not doing us good in reaching our destinies, so that we can then correct it and get off of the wagon, so to speak, and move on to something greater in ourselves. The biggest holdback we have are our habits and negative behaviors, because as a licensed clinical addiction specialist and a licensed addiction treatment professional, addiction covers everything. There's not one thing that we do as a people that could not fall prey into addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard stories of a woman who got clean from doing drugs, but then became addicted to buying panties everywhere she could. And I say that. I say that because it was real. And I sat there in the room listening to her say this, and I'm saying, panties? And she said, yeah. I had an addiction to buying panties, because when I was in active addiction and living in abandoned buildings and everything like that, I didn't have clean panties.
Mm-hmm.
So when she finally got clean, her addiction jumped from panties. I mean, excuse me, jump from drugs, crack cocaine,
mm-hmm.
to panties. Mm-hmm. And so she would spend all her money.
Wow.
Going to thrift stores, going to the dollar store, going to all these places, buying panties that she could never wear. She had so many panties, she'd never wear them all.
Mm-hmm.
I often tell this joke, and it's often looked down upon by a lot of women, because I said, look at how many shoes we have in our closet. Mm-hmm. And some women have 80, 90 pairs of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And the shoes you bought 5 years ago, you're not going to wear no more, because you're not wearing those outfits no more. They're not in style. But you hoard them, and you continue to buy shoes. That's an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about letting go earlier, and letting go is the key to staying clean. If you want to stay clean, you got to learn to let go of stuff, internal stuff, personal stuff, as well as physical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all creates a sense of guilt, shame, undue sense of security, that if we just walked through the insecurity and got to the other side, then we wouldn't feel insecure anymore.
Mm.
You know, there's people addicted to relationships. Mm-hmm. I gotta have a man, I gotta have a woman. Even though all the relationships that they've been in so far have always ended negatively. they still in the throes of, I got to have a relationship. So they get into relationships that they know are not going to be successful because that's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And it suits the moment versus a loftier goal is somebody I can have for a lifetime. So there's nothing, you know, from food to TV to porn to everything, just like you all were saying, that is not subject to an addiction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so once we have that understanding, then we can begin to look at our behavior and begin to say, ooh, wait a minute. Am I teetering on addiction?
Is this
maybe something I need to put some brakes on? Because a lot of the stuff we could put the brakes on if we think about it consciously. If we just go with the flow and go with our first mind, which is what a lot of people in the treatment community say. If you function on your first mind all the time, you're subject to make a lot of mistakes because you're not thinking things through.
Now,
case
Baba,
in point.
Adisa. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I just have a question.
No, I was just going to say, case in point. Payday was last Friday for a lot of people. How many people have already spent their whole check? Some of us have paid our rent. Some of us have paid our major bills. But maybe the light bill didn't get paid. Or you didn't pay the full light bill, but you had the money to pay that light bill because you were saving that so that you can go to the liquor store. Or you were saving that so you can go to the mall. Or you were saving that so you can go to the club. Or you were saving that so you can get in that ball. I need a reading. People get addicted to getting readings too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I need a reading. Mm-hmm. What you need a reading for? Oh, I just feel funny. I know I need a reading. Hold on. What about your Ori?
That's right.
Your Ori is your first oracle. So if you're in the tradition and you got to get a reading every 5 minutes because you feel uncomfortable, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that's getting deep into some serious mental stuff. But I'm saying, even those that think they have got it together can still fall prey to addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that disrupts your life to the standpoint that you are now starting to manipulate your finances, the people around you, your job, your relationships,
mm-hmm.
you've crossed over into addiction. Once you start doing that, you know, an addict will sit back and go, oh, well, I'll go ahead and get high this weekend, and then I'll go to mama's house and borrow $60 to make it until next payday, knowing that they ain't going to make it till next payday, but they're going to have to go to somebody else and get another $60.
Mm-hmm.
So, Addiction plays out in the manipulation that we do to try to live a normal life in spite of the fact that we're doing non-normal things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I
a lot of people say, well, okay.
I have a question. And remember, I am the one who really does not understand. I don't comprehend addiction. And so...
Mm-hmm.
My question is, there are places where I can hear control, so why can't we have control all the time? You know, like for these individuals that overindulge, for the functional addicts, you know, that are overindulging on the weekend, I'm like, okay, whatever was holding you good Monday through Thursday, why is it not holding you good on Friday and Saturday? If you can control yourself enough through the week, what happens to whatever that is, that control, what happens to that on the weekend? So my thing is, really, you can control this. You know, because there are times where a person like me believes that, oh, I can't control it, the drug got me. I couldn't control myself. You know, I was beating you because I was drunk or whatever. But really, you're making a choice to be drunk. So could you just, the choice idea for those that don't know, how does that work?
Well, first and foremost, addiction is uncontrollable. It's bigger than any of us.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, because it impacts not only our behavior and our thought process, but our brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a certain amount of anxiety, excitement, exuberation that comes from doing whatever that behavior is that gets you, that just says, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good now. That's a brain, that's a chemical reaction in the brain between your endorphins, all of the neurotransmitters and everything is clicking in to get fed.
Mm-hmm.
And it can get fed. It doesn't have to be a drug. It can be retail therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It can be looking at porn. Now, that person who looks at porn may never actually do anything after looking at that porn, but in the process of looking at that porn, their brain is being stimulated and being excited and being altered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what satiates them. That's what gets them to, I'm good. Now, it usually doesn't last long, so that means that they're going to do it again and do it again. And then also you have the compounded issue of, okay, I've looked at this or I've done this so many times and I've had the same result. Now I want something stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I want something that impacts me even better. So now I may go out on the block and see if I can't pick up somebody and try to act out what I saw in the video.
Mm-hmm.
Putting themselves in jeopardy.
That risky behavior.
Risky, and it opens the door to greater risky behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I can make it from Sunday to Friday on will, because I know it'll disrupt everything else that's going on in my life. But on Friday, I'm off to the races. As soon as I get off work or as soon as I get out of class or as soon as, you know, my kids go to bed, I can do me. And that's where the selfishness and the self-centeredness of addiction
mm-hmm.
comes from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to understand that addiction is a selfish disease. It causes you to take time and energy and effort away from all those things that will enrich your life so that you could have 5-10 minutes of nirvana, pleasure, whatever you want to call it. And then then the cycle starts all over again where you feel guilty. Oh, I ain't gonna do that no more. I don't like how it made me feel. But it wasn't strong enough by itself. And here's the other piece. If you could cure addiction by yourself, anybody would. Just by telling yourself, I ain't doing this no more.
Mm-hmm.
If you could do it, you would. Because you know it's destroying you. It's hurting your character. It's making you feel guilty, making you feel depressed. It's doing all these negative things to you internally. But when do you get to the point to where I'm not willing to go through that anymore? And that's where you got to learn some tools. And that's where 12 steps are real key in teaching the tools
mm-hmm.
of recovery. Not the tools of addiction, because you got plenty of tools that you can learn from the internet, from your friends, from other
mm-hmm.
addicts.
Mm-hmm.
Those are readily available. How to be a good addict. And if you can find a good addict, you let me know.
Mm-hmm.
I work with them every day. And there's good people that are addicts, but when they're in addict mode, they're not good people. So we have to understand that if you could do it by yourself, you would. It's something that only somebody who is trained to identify the behaviors and attack and confront the thought process behind the behavior, and then hopefully ultimately get to the cause of those behaviors. What's the root cause of somebody feeling like they have to do something or they have to feel a certain way? Now, if you're,
and
if
that's
you have
one
a,
of the reasons that I like the 12-step program, because they do deal with, you know, going beneath the surface. They're not just treating the symptom. The symptom is the alcoholism or the drug addiction or whatever. But what's at the root of that? What's at the bottom? What is the root cause of this person feeling that they have to numb themselves 24/7? Because it does start off a lot of times, you know, as feeling good and, you know, just having a good time and that. And sometimes people are able to walk right straight from casual use to social use and then on to, you know, addiction, because, you know, most people that have reached their bottom will tell you, I started off having fun and going to parties and doing a little drugs here and all that kind of stuff, and it felt good, you know. But 2-3 years or even less than that, they're telling you how miserable they are. They're actively suicidal. They look like hell. You know, they've lost their job, they've lost their family, they've lost their homes, you name it. They have suffered a lot of losses and still cannot get out of their active addiction without help, without that help, without that help.
They can't do it themselves.
Yeah, can't do it themselves.
They need a program.
They need. Now, Bob, I want to ask you this, and I've heard this around the rooms forever. The rooms are like that 12-step program's family where they go and get, you know, their help. Hi, my name is Mama Khadija, and I'm an active addictor, active addiction, whatever. That's what the rooms are. So when I say the rooms, that's what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh, I know you know, but I didn't know if the family knew. Okay, so they talk about changing people, places, and things, those external things. So along with the therapy, along with, you know, working on actively working on those steps and dealing with your recovery, can you go into people, places, and things?
Definitely. That's the first. That's one of the first things that you're taught. As what are your tools? What are your tools of recovery? Because now you've made a commitment to get clean. Before, people, places, and things didn't mean nothing. Because you were still going to people, places, and things. But once you've made a commitment, your first tool of recovery is to stop going through people, places, and things. People, toxic people, people who are negative, people who use actively. What good is it for you to not use, but you keep going over to boyfriend or girlfriend's house who's still using? And I don't mean intimate boyfriend and girlfriend. I mean just friends. Boyfriend, girlfriend, these are my friends that I grew up with. They still drink. They still smoke weed. They still smoke crack. They still do heroin. They still do, you know, all the things that I used to do that I found didn't work for me. You got to cut that off. Doesn't mean you have to cut them off as friends, and that's what a lot of people get caught up in. Well, those are my friends. Those are, you know, my ace, boom, coom. They'll do anything for me, blah, say, blah. Well, you think so. Tell them that you no longer use and see if they're still your friend. Are they willing to not do what they do in front of you because you don't use? Are they positive and encouraging and uplifting to you when you're at your low moments? Those are real friends. Are they telling you the truth when you don't want to hear the truth? Those are your real friends. Those other folks are people that we've accumulated in the course of life. Because you'll find that you don't really have that much in common with them anymore once you stop using. Stop going around people who continue to use. Places. Some of the clubs. Some of the hangouts. Some of the street corners. You know, but that's what I do on Friday night when I get off work. I go hang out. You got to do something different. You have to retrain your mind to do something different. And that means not going to the same spots that kept you in active addiction in the first place. If going to the club is something that you, if I go to the club, I know I'm a drink. I gotta get me a Tanqueray. You know, I gotta get this and that. Okay. The club itself, think about it. The club is dark. What comes out in the dark? And I'm not talking about freaks. All people's inhibitions and negative behaviors start to exude in the dark because they're not used to being in the light. They don't function well in the light. When we talk about vibration, dark colored clothes attracts negative energy to you. So when you're hanging out in the dark, you know, in a clouded, smoky club, and then the music that they're playing in the club is usually something that's programmed to get you in a mood. And I used to be a DJ, so I know. First part of the night, pump it up, get everybody jumping and happening and having a good time. Middle part of the night, say around 11, 12, you start winding down and playing a little bit of slow music. Right around 2 a.m., all you playing is slow music, trying to get people linked up so they can say when they go home, I had a great time. So that's the purpose of a lot of the club scenes. And in a lot of times, a lot of people have to take a break from that. Learn to appreciate another form of entertainment. You know, how many of us sat around and played cards sober? How many of us went to the movies?
Sober.
When you're in active addiction, you don't do those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many of us just sat around and talked and had deep philosophical conversations? You don't do that in active addiction because you're chasing. And if you're not chasing, then you're trying to recover from what you just did. So that's the places that keep you in that mindset that using is okay. Then things. What are the things that trigger you? I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home this weekend to Mama's house. And you know things at Mama's house ain't right. You got 15 cousins living up in Mama's house, and every time you go, you get upset because they're using your mama or they're using grandmama. And when you get upset, that's a trigger for you to have to self-medicate to deal with the anger that you acquire once you get there. I'm not saying don't visit grandma. But I'm saying go pick grandma up and take her out to eat and do something else, but don't sit up in that house where you got to look at 5, 10, 15 people that ain't doing nothing but living off of grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Going to hang out with cousin so-and-so or uncle so-and-so or just the boys that you went to school with. You know, and they're all bent on this negative thought process, oh, I can't get a job. They won't let me get a job. You know, all those things that trigger negative thoughts. And see, dealing with your triggers is a tough one because they can pop up and you don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so people's places and things all deal with thought process. People evoke thought because of their behaviors. So if you're hanging out with people who use, it's going to be real tough. I'm not saying you won't never be able to stop using, but it's going to be tough. One of the things that I tell folks is, if you drive, drive yourself. Don't ride with other people. And everybody says, well, why? I said, because when it's time to go, it may be time for you to go 2 or 3 hours before it's time for other people to go, because you feel yourself getting weak and feeling like you want to use.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're riding with somebody else who ain't ready to go, you stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be aware that we could be triggered at any moment. You could be triggered by a TV program. Watch mm-hmm. one of those shows on drugs or on Vice Channel or on one of these other channels is talking about addiction. And you see somebody put something in their arm, or they drinking alcohol real heavy, or you didn't even see them do it. You see the after effect. Somebody who done shot up on heroin, and they nodding, bending over almost to the floor, but they fell. And you might say, ooh, I know what that feels like. I want that again.
Huh. That's
crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a trigger for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely insane. I don't...
You know, or you go hang out with people who are real materialistic. Girl, you got to see what I bought at the mall today. And if retail addiction is your thing, and then you look at somebody else, what they talking about and bragging about, and you say, damn, I want the same thing. I could get that. I got some money saved up. Not that money that you saved up was for something else, but I got the money to get that. The next day, you off to the races, because the mall probably closed. But...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next day you at the mall trying to buy it. Now you done relapsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the biggest things I see as an addiction trigger is food channel. If I'm trying to stay away from rich foods that are going to clog my arteries and make me sluggish, and then I turn on the food channel and I see, you know, the Cake Boss or one of them other shows, and it just starts triggering. Ooh, I bet you that tastes delicious. Next thing you know, you're going to buy some cinnamon buns at the store. You know, yeah, they're only 15 cents, but
mm-hmm.
how long is it going to take you to work that off after you've consumed it?
Mm-hmm.
So now you got another issue to deal with, which is the weight that you gain from participating in your own addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've never seen the addiction done neatly. It just affects just one part of your life, like this is just this, or, you know, it always
mm-hmm.
has multiple, like a domino effect on the many different aspects that it gets touches. You know, one thing I wanted to ask, and the phone lines are open. I just wanted to let people know if you want to join in the question, in the conversation, you want to ask the question, the phone lines are open. But one thing I wanted to clarify and to kind of ask, what can people like myself do about this? Because this, I see it, and it's painful, you know. I see people
mm-hmm.
struggling and everything. You know, what are some support things that can be offered as far as just sharing and helping this person that I know is struggling and, you know, probably not making it all the way? How do you help in those situations?
I think to me, and I'm, how do I put it? I'm not shy about wanting to help someone who's struggling. You know, we can't be shy about a loved one who's really going down a bad road.
Mm-hmm.
you know. And so confronting them, even, you know, even from the aspect of, you know, I notice every time we have something, you know, as a family, you either don't make it or you show up late. And by the time you get there, you already high. Or you're not in your right mind. We have to begin as a community, as a family, to confront people. Because a lot of times people will continue because they don't think nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And then in their addictive mind, they'll twist that to say nobody cares. If they cared, they would tell me to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy because it's all we're trying to do is love you. But we love our people to death.
We love our people to death. We love our family to death. And that brings me to another issue that I want you to address, Baba Disa, and that is enabling.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one. You don't know how many families will put mechanisms and things in place to enable. Well, don't ask so-and-so to do nothing because you know, he ain't responsible. You know, that one day you ask that person to do it, that might be the day that they was ready to jump off the bridge. So we can't overlook someone's negative behaviors. And we constantly do that. We'll shut them out. You know, I never figured out why parents say, well, my child's on drugs, they got to get out my house. Okay, so now you can't put eyes on that child. Now you can't talk any life into that person because you have cast them out. Not only cast them out into their addiction, but into their own mind and their own negative behavior. And one of the things that all addictions do is move you to a place of depression. And once you get depressed enough, then suicide becomes acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of times, when we talk to drug addicts, it's like, I just want to die. Well, hell, you've been shooting that stuff in your arm for 5 years. Why ain't you dead yet? You have to confront the illogical thinking. If you wanted to die, you could, because you know how. But you didn't. So now, what's the real deal? Do you want attention? Are you seeking attention, or are you looking at something that you can't control and are powerless to do anything about? I can help you with that. Only they can stop themselves from self-destructing. I don't care how much we talk to them, pray for them, everything else. If a person is hell-bent on self-destructing and committing suicide, they will do it slow, or they'll do it fast, but they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do is speak life to them and say, hey, you know, I love you. I don't want to see anything happen to you. You are a beautiful person. You need to do something else. And if you need to go to a program, let me help you. But we can't sit back and say, well, so-and-so can come sleep on my couch, and then you got to lock every door in your house when you ain't home because you're afraid that that person is going to rob you and steal your stuff and make you feel uncomfortable when you ain't home. We can't do that no more. Crack showed us. Them jokers will steal everything out your house And sell it on the block.
Yeah. Everything in the microwave.
You know, when you start hearing stories about people on crack and other drugs that, you know, went out, bought Christmas presents for their kids, but then the day before Christmas was broke and took all the gifts for the kids and went and sold them to the dope man that got to buy dope. And dogged out the children. Children
I'm
woke up
you right there
after
for a
seeing
second.
All the stuff, and it's gone.
I'm going to pause you right there for a second. We got callers calling in. I want to grab it
okay.
for prayer time. So stay, I'll keep your mic open for a moment. Stay with us for a second, okay? 5989, welcome to the show. Greetings. Okay, let me have hit one accidentally. And then we have a 678-1513. Welcome to the show. Greetings. Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. I've been listening to your show. My name is Sauda.
Greetings, sister.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm blessed.
I think I'm qualified as a advocate. I have all the experience. I am a recovering addict. I have been battling with this disease since 1990 when I first tried to get clean. I've been addicted pretty much all my life, but I didn't know I was addicted because my addiction didn't start with the dope. It started with manipulation. You know, I learned how to manipulate my parents. I learned how to manipulate my teachers, my friends, to get what I wanted. And therefore, it became easier that when something happened to me in my family, you know, in my home, I didn't like it. I rebelled. So I started smoking cigarettes. From the cigarettes, I wanted to learn how to smoke weed. So I started hanging with the kids in high school who were cutting class, who was doing all the end things that I wanted to do, anything that would make me forget my problem. I wanted somebody to hear me, and this was the best way for them to hear me, was to see me doing these things. So I started cutting class. I started using, smoking weed. I got married at a very early age. I was 17. I ran away from home. I was senior in high school, and my mother made me get married. So I got married, and me and my new husband, we were smoking weed, drinking. Then we started selling weed. And so it was about supporting our habit. And one thing led to another. That wasn't enough. Years went by. I had four children. And that's when crack came on the scene. Oh, wow, I couldn't wait to learn how to use that. Because marijuana wasn't enough. I had to have something harder. I had tried pills. I had tried a lot of things. And when I got to the crack, it was like a opened up for me. I spent over half of my life trying to stop. It drained my life after 3 months of learning and picking it up. I couldn't feed my kids, let alone feed myself. Everything that I brought into the home went out for the dope. I am lucky today, blessed today to be alive. All the things that I've ever went through, you would not know the things that I've gone through. I raised my kids in the project, so it was easier to get the dope. Whenever I relapsed, I would always go back to my playground, you know. And I heard one thing, why we say, when you had asked about when you go into the room, you say, hey, my name is, for instance, my name is Saud and I'm an addict, because I'm only known by my first name. Everything else is anonymous. You know, what is said in the rooms, we can share and talk about who we are and ourselves, but we can't talk about who we saw in the rooms and what they talked about, you know, and who said
gotcha.
What. We could talk about what we heard, but not put a name to it. You see what I'm saying? Because that's the whole thing for being anonymous, you know, and it makes addicts feel safe when they go into the rooms and they know that nobody knows them. You don't know my past. All you know is my first name. And over half of us come in there with street names.
Right.
The names that we use on the streets. So when I went into treatment, I've been to so many different treatments. I bet you I've probably been in about 10 or 15 treatment programs, and some of them more than once, and I still didn't get it. It's because I wasn't ready, and I know I wasn't ready. I needed a place to stay. I was homeless for 3-4 years. My kids was in California with their dad, and I needed somewhere to stay. So the best thing to do, when I would get high and I get sick and tired of being sick and tired, I went to the payphone, and I picked up the phone, and I would call 911 and tell them I wanted to kill myself. I was manipulating the system within the system. I knew how to get what I wanted, and I wanted to get off the street. I couldn't get no more dope, so what the hell am I going to stay on the street for? I ain't got nowhere to sleep. I ain't got nothing to eat. I know if I call the police to come and get me, they're going to take me down to the hospital, take me to Grady or one of the CAB addiction center. Anyway, I've been all over. And they're going to, and I can get something to eat. I can get something to sleep. I can get a break. I can get some rest. So that's all I was doing was getting a rest. I wasn't trying to get the program from what I knew, because over and over again, I could accumulate. Sometimes it was hard to accumulate 30 days. Then it got easier to accumulate 30 days, and then I could get 90 days, and then I even got a year, and then I would get 2 years. I got 5 years, but I would always go back. Why? Because Sauda had made up in her mind that she wanted to stay stopped, that I wanted, that I hadn't been beat up enough. I was lying to myself. So every time I came into the room, they would say, you full of it. And I never understood what they meant by telling me I'm full of it. But I know today what they mean by that, because you in and out and in and out, and you know you don't want this program. And they were right. Today I can get honest about that. I started all over again with all the time and all the things that I know about addiction, my addiction and my drug of choice, all the things that I know and all the times that I almost lost my life. Now I know, and I don't want to pick up again. So I go to meetings. I have a sponsor. I'm working the steps. I have a contact list. I feel down. I get depressed. You know what I'm saying? I don't have those dreams anymore, but I still get depressed. And sometimes, you know, I don't think about using, because I can use if I want to. That was easy. The hardest thing was to stay stopped. It's easy to pick up, but the hardest thing was to stay stopped. And now I have people that I know that support me, that love me, and I'm learning to love myself. And the more I get into these steps, the more I'll learn to love Sauda. Mm-hmm. What is my worth? What is Sauda's worth? What can I do? Well, I started a business of my own, but that didn't help me stay stopped. Hell, I started using in my truck. That didn't help me. It had to be me. I had to want this. I have to want this bad enough. You know, I used to walk miles just to go get some dope. I don't know how I kept up with my habit, you know, with no money, but I was able to do it. You know what I'm saying? And now I want this. I want this really, really bad. So I stay clean and sober. I don't pick up. I call somebody. If I can't reach one person, I'll call somebody else. I'll call many people to keep from getting high today. I don't want to die. I know that I want to live. I have thought sometimes of hurting myself, but I haven't come to grips with why I want to hurt myself. What is it about me that I don't like or that I don't love? But I don't want to die. And I know I can go. There's outside help other than self-help in the room. This help, I can go get a third-party help with therapy. My sponsor suggested that I go to therapy and get some other help, some professional help, because this is a disease, and it's got to kill, steal, or destroy, and destroy. It don't care about me. It don't care about my business. It don't care about nothing. It will take me hostage if I feed into it. So today, I'm here, and I'm alive, and I'm grateful. I am grateful to be alive today. I am grateful to be clean and sober.
And to
with my 18 months, I'm proud of that.
Yes,
I can't
I'm
look back on when I first came
months.
Into the room and how much time I could have had, because I got friends who got 20-something years, and I say to myself, I came in the rooms with them. I should have that much time. No, I didn't. I got just what I needed right here. I was hard-headed. It took a lot more for me. It took a lot for me. Maybe not for them, but it took that much for me.
Mm-hmm.
It took that much for me. So I'm grateful
thank
for
you.
These 18 yeah. months. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank God,
thank
and
you
thank you
sharing.
For that beautiful testimony. Thank you for
mm-hmm.
sharing and giving
mm-hmm.
us all some insight into your journey.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely.
Mama,
yes.
Can we begin to turn this? I don't know how many other questions we have or other testimonies we have, but at some point we need to turn this around to recovery so that people can see the other side
okay.
of addiction,
okay.
the beautiful side of addiction. Because addiction doesn't have to be a dead end. There's a lot of good
okay.
things that come from working to get yourself clean, sober, and
mm-hmm.
staying
mm-hmm.
clean, sober.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the recovery
okay.
piece that a lot of people miss out on. They only hear the negative.
Mm-hmm.
They don't ever hear the positive.
Well, we are winding down. I would love to get 2-minute shout out. You know, what 2 minutes do you want to say? Do you want to leave people with? What imprint do you have for them? What words do you want to share? Baba Deetha, why don't you go first? You hung out with us all day. Wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Thank you. But what's your 2 minutes?
All right, and don't be afraid to cut me off. Just say, okay,
okay.
Thank you. You know, I could get long-winded. But what I wanted to say about going through and being in the recovery process, you can change all those negative things that have held you back in your life if you work a program. And the program can be 12-step. It can be a psychological program and going to counseling or whatever. But you got to put in the time, and you put it in the time not into the addiction but into you. That's the beautiful part, finding out who you are. Because a lot of times we just do stuff because we don't know what we're supposed to do. A lot of times we're doing stuff because it's a habit. I grew up doing this, and I'm going to keep doing it because I don't know what else to do. Recovery gives you an opportunity to put the brakes on all that negative stuff and begin to see some of the positive stuff and become grateful for your life, the simple things in life. That make life rewarding, relationships. I can't tell you how many relationships that I've had with recovering addicts that are just wholesome and beautiful and supportive. You know, and it's like, wow, I never knew that life could be like that. You never know until you go through it. But you can't go through it if you're using it. When you get clean, then you can begin to say, well, you know, I ain't doing nothing this Saturday. What you doing this Saturday? I ain't doing nothing. Well, let's get together and barbecue and play cards and sit up and watch the football game or whatever. And just have people there because they want to be there. They want to have you around. They want to have you in their life. You know, your all those relationships that you might have burnt on your way down, you can begin to heal on your way up, because they're going to see a difference in you, and you're going to be different. You're going to care about other people. People in active addiction don't care about nobody else but themselves. But when you begin to care about other people feed on that, and they begin to show you love back. Jobs that you never thought you could have, school that you never thought you could go to, relationships that you never thought you could have, relationships that your kids that you done burnt up, now they're in foster care or they staying with your auntie and your uncle, you can get those back. But you got to do your work first. And that's the beauty of the recovery process. It helps you to do that. You got to heal yourself first. And I tell this, and I'll probably end on this, put your oxygen mask on first. Get yourself right first. And then everything else will come as you recover. And sometimes we got to make amends. We got to pay off bills. And some people have had to go to jail after many years of sobriety. But they get to the point to where, you know what, I got to make amends for that robbery I did, or that vandalism that I did, or, you know, whatever. And they turn themselves in. And they go to jail. And they come out clean, but they come out with a greater sense of purpose of who they are and what they're about, and they're able to walk the earth with their head held high, with hopefully, you know, good relationships around them. If they get a job, they got money in their pockets. You know, some of the hardest working people are people in recovery, because they know what it was like not to have.
Right.
And if you ain't never been without, then you don't know what it is to have something.
Right.
So that's one of the positive things that can come out of this experience. And this experience touches everybody, not just
the
poor
ghetto kids. I'm going to get you right there. Thank you so much again.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity.
Absolutely. And I can hear and feel your passion. You know, the people that you work with are really blessed to have you. They're blessed to be a part of you.
I'm blessed to be able to serve them.
Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes.
Khadija, I got 2 minutes for you. This has been touching, and it's been real. And I appreciate your transparency in the middle of this. Do you have 2 minutes to share, words you'd like to share?
Who is that?
I'm asking you.
Oh, okay. Oh, boy. I just want to thank Baba Disa for coming on and giving us so much insight into this disease. And I believe that addiction is a disease. And I know back in the day that was a big controversy, but I believe in my heart that it's a disease, and I believe there's certain people that are predisposed to the disease. I also want to thank Sister Sauda for coming on and sharing her journey through recovery. That I'm humbled by her story. Even though I knew bits and pieces of it, but to be able to share that, you know, on the world stage is one thing, to share it in the rooms. On the world stage, we on the radio here, what you went through and what you are still coming through, and I know it's one day at a time, and I know you're going to make it. I love you. I thank you for sharing, because in sharing, you're helping somebody in this listening audience who's teetering right on the brink of addiction or who is in active addiction. So your story will always be there for them, and maybe that will inspire them to get help. And I know when you tell your stories, I know this through the morning camps that we have, where it's a purging and grieving ritual weekend, you know, we encourage the people to tell their stories, because your story is going to help not only someone else to find their way through their recovery, regardless of what it might be, but it also gives you more strength and more power over the things that have happened to you. So I just want to thank our guests. I want to thank the listening audience. If you have any questions, and I want to encourage, because this prayer of serenity has really, really helped me through so many things. When I'm up against something and I don't know
which way I should go. That's like a measuring stick for me. Okay, I want to share, I want to close my little 2 minutes off with that.
Mm-hmm.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can. And wisdom to know the difference.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mama Khadija. This was pulling teeth for me, family. I'm not even going to lie. You know, this was pulling teeth. So I really wanted to thank everyone for their time. We're getting to my favorite part of the show. And this is when we have our prayer come onto the line and share. And this is a special prayer, a young prayer warrior in the making. Welcome to the show. Greetings.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
My name is Solomon. I'm going to end us with a prayer.
Okay.
Make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye land. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving, and enter his courts with praise. Be thankful unto him, and bless his name. For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endureth to all generations. Amen.
Amen.